Man, like when I think about that, like the way you just said, even like calling on phone is it's not the same, because in person you have to eye contact, read body positioning, right? Like matching, like it's so many things. My question for you is like, do you think that some people actually do have it kind of like in it, or is it like truthfully you had to like say, hey, I'm good with people, but I got to get better with people. Like it's an actual skill set that you can build. Which one do you think?
Really, really good. Good question. So I think people often underestimate like that, the science in selling. I really do. We all hear successful salesmen and we think of like the extroverts. We think of like the people that are A-type personalities, the center of attention. And those people may have some gifts, right? Natural gifts that might help in their ability to be persuasive and communicate. You may come to the table with some characteristics that might help you a little bit like assimilate to it. But when it comes to sales, like specifically persuasion, there is a science to it. There is a very tactical nature in how to be more persuasive. Crazy about it, Ruben, is the most talented salesmen that I know, they're all introverts. They're not the Grant Cardones. They're not the Pace Morbys. They're not these guys that are natural salesmen, as we like to call it, because they're extroverted. They're the people that are extremely tactical in their choice of words and how they say it, their inflections, their tone.
Who's this? Oh, you're an entrepreneur? Oh, you're a real estate investor? Oh, you're trying to learn from those who did it? Well, come into the lab then. Put your white coat on, gloves on, notepad, and let's build, y'all.
Real estate experiment. What is happening, y'all, man? Today, I got a gentleman that I'm I want to give his flowers to just because level of humility. And level of learning and level of leverage, say that with a capital L, and getting results, man. That's what I'm all about. And so, man, when I connected with him, like right away, the energy, I was like, this guy's got is vibrating on a whole frequency. And you're very humble too, because I'm like, even Kyle had to get it out of you last time we connected. We got introduced we were hosting an event, a virtual event. You came in, dropped some game for our community around your specialty in creative financing, which I'm very, very interested to tap into because you molded it. Like this is what we talk about in the lab. We talk about molding experiments together, right? Like a proof of concept, taking two proofs of concept and putting it together. And lo and behold, I connect with you now. And of course, it's currently second quarter here of 2024, and you already are implementing another leverage play along with that experiment of yours. So I want to first welcome Alame, a true practitioner. I need to send you a lab coat, brother, because that is exactly what we do in the lab, man. How you doing, Steve, bro? How you doing?
Ruben, brother. Hey, I'm just excited to be here because like you said, the moment we met, we connected, we vibed, and I consider you a real friend. So I just appreciate you having me and appreciate your time, brother. Excited to be here.
Yeah, man. Listen, I always like to say, like, iron sharpens iron. And, you know, I was telling you about the episodes I had on here. And I got to say, man, I'm humbled because I come here and I'm already taking notes. I'm humbled. Like, I just get the game and I get to foster relationships and I get to share with my community. And I know you're trying to do the same. So shout out to your community as well. And I want to make sure I get this right. You've coined that term. Is it Casper?
Caster. So it's like C-A-S-T-R.
Yeah. So creative, essentially creative financing into the STR experiment. Is that right?
Okay. Yep. Creative acquisitions into short-term rentals. Yes, sir.
Love that. Yeah. So that's Caster. So dude, like how did this thing happen? And before, because I always believe that you're a reflection of your business. And I think great entrepreneurs like yourself solve problems. Let me ask you, what problem are you trying to solve a couple years? Take me a couple years back, man. Age me a little. Yeah. What's happening? What problem were you trying to solve initially? And then how did you stumble across a potential solution where you wanted to be the supply to the demand?
Yeah. So there's been a few major problems that I was able to solve from the beginning. And I'll start from the beginning and give tip of iceberg. But the first problem I was trying to solve was my own. How do I quit my 9-to-5, right? And that's when I first got involved in real estate. This is back in 2017, 2018. Bought a house, just normal traditional finance. My entire career prior to my real estate has all been 1099. I was always in sales. And that was kind of like where I cut my teeth in. And there was always a struggle. And this problem was a problem that I solved in multiple ways as I expound on my story. But it's the 1099 problem of trying to write off as much of your income as possible. But then inevitably, when you go to buy a house, you're not showing enough income because you've written it all off to save from tax liability.
Right? Double-edged sword, huh?
Mm-hmm. And so that was a problem that I really honestly didn't know how to solve. And when I ended up buying my first property, I just bit the bullet and paid two down payments. The down payment for the house, 3.5 on a normal traditional FHA loan, but then also the down payment on taxes because I had to show enough to be able to qualify for the home, which inevitably opened me up to tax liability. So I had to pay, I can't remember what it was. I think it was like 60 grand total, 30 to the down payment and the other 30 to the house or some weird number like that. I can't remember. But actually, now that I think about it, I think the tax down payment was more than the actual down payment for the house. But in any case, I wanted to get out of the rat race. I was trying to figure out, man, this can't be the only way to scale. So I ended up moving out of that house. I wanted to rent it out. And at the time I was like, hey, I'm just too lazy to move my furniture. What if we just kept it here? And that was my introduction to Airbnb because I was like, well, what if we just rented on furnished rentals? And so got an Airbnb, started to learn the game with my own portfolio, got really good at operations. I just learned how to operate extremely well. And that was the birth, really, of a management company, which is this sign back here, Elk Ridge Management. That was how my company started, was we then just got into managing other people's real estate as a short-term rental specifically. That was what we managed entirely. And that was the birth of this company. And so we started getting really good at that. Fast forward to today, we now own most of our portfolio. We got into the creative finance space. You know, I kind of solved, again, that problem came back again, right? When later in life, when I started to do, this business, I was making all this income, but I was like, there has to be a better way of acquiring than just eating the tax bill, paying the tax bill, putting 20% down on a property, having the taxes for another year to be able to do it once a year. There has to be more to this than that. And that's when I kind of found this thing, creative finance. And so now fast forward today, that's what we do entirely is we're taking the creative acquisition, creative finance world, plugging it into the short-term rental world, hence the birth of Castor. And that's what I like to say is what I do all day, every day now.
So. All day, live and breathe. That's crazy. So it's interesting because there's always different ways that you kind of plug in to a space. It's interesting because usually entrepreneurs are scratching their own itch, right? But I'm curious though, you said, first of all, I've never heard of that, like the whole down payment on taxes. Like I've never heard of it. Like I didn't even know that was like a thing, like a tax bill.
Well, sorry. So what I mean by that is I just had to pay taxes.
Yeah.
Okay. I just, and you have to pay your taxes or at least start a payment plan to be able to buy a house. Traditionally, they double check that. So what I had to do was put a large amount down to pay taxes to file my taxes for that year so that I can use those taxes to qualify for the home.
Wow. That's very interesting. 1099. So sales, what kind of sales, man?
So I was in door-to-door sales for about 6-7 years. So it was the elite of sales is what I like to call it because there's no other sales experience like it. So,
dude, I've never done door to door, but like I gotta say, like I got a buddy who like essentially, do you know Power? The company Power, man. Like that, they basically they'll knock on your door, give you a quote for the like is it
solar?
Solar, I think.
Yeah.
That level of skill set, I gotta say, man, like that muscle. Like, I don't got kids yet or anything, but I feel like that's got to be some level of requirement of an internship, right? Like, what was your experience? I mean, maybe is it, I mean, I would have to assume that it helped what, get rejected, helped how to talk 100%. To people. Like, is it all of the above? What was it for 100%.
You? So I'll give you this experience, right? And this is a very common experience in this industry that you develop very specific skill sets, right? Mm-hmm. Very few industries can you learn the skill set that requires me to, I knock on a door, guy comes out super irate, just pissed off, like literally hates me, haven't even said a word. And in 45 minutes, I'm now walking out of the door. I have a cold Coke in hand. I have a signed PSA and this guy wants me to marry his daughter, right? Like what happens from that point to closing and walking out of the house, that 45 minutes, there is a lot of interpersonal communication, emotionally intelligent skills that are developed that are transferable in any industry. 100%. Your entire life, you're selling yourself. When you go in for an interview, when you're a doctor trying to tell this patient why they need to take this medication, when you're an engineer trying to show your GCs, hey, this is what we need to do. These are all sales. You're just basically trying to persuade somebody to do something. And there is no better capacity to learn that in than what the knocking doors. There just isn't, right? Yeah. And so that those skill sets, to your point, Ruben, have been, I tell people this all the time because people are always like, oh man, like how'd you do this in 5 years? How'd you do this 6 years? And I'm like, I didn't. I did it in like 12 because I started this business, whether I knew it or not, the day I started knocking doors. That was the day that I learned how to build and learned how to develop these skills to get me to this point, right? And so so that's what I have to say about door knocking. Yeah, it's a hustle. It's a hustle.
Wow. It's crazy because, man, like when I think about that, like the way you just said, even like calling on phone is it's not the same because in person you have to – eye contact, read, body positioning, right? Like matching, like it's so many things. My question for you is like in retrospect now, because I'm sure like when you, I believe you're with the amount of reps you got, for me, that's mastery at that point, right? Do you think in retrospect, there's things that come subconsciously now, but do you think that some people actually do have it kind of like in it, or is it like truthfully, you had to like say, hey, I'm good with people, but I got to get better with people. Like it's an actual skill set that you can build. Which one do you think?
Really, really good. Good question. So I think people often underestimate like that, the science in selling. I really do. Right. People often attribute. And I think I see a lot of people that always credit themselves, like, especially in sales, like the success or the perceived success of sales coming from their personality. Like we all hear successful salesmen and we think of like the extroverts. We think of like the people that are A-type personalities, the center of attention. And those people may have some gifts, right? Natural gifts that might help in their ability to be persuasive and communicate. But it is the single most misunderstood like profession out there when it comes to, is this a skill? Because it is very much a skill and it is a learned skill. You may come to the table with some characteristics that might help you a little bit like assimilate to it. But when it comes to sales, like specifically persuasion, there is a science to it. There is a very tactical nature in how to be more persuasive. And what's crazy about it, Ruben, is the most talented salesmen that I know, they're all introverts. They're not the Grant Cardones.
Wild.
They're not the Pace Morbys. They're not these guys that are natural salesmen, as we like to call it, because they're extroverted. They're the people that are extremely tactical in their choice of words and how they say it, their inflections, their tone. Right? These are all things that are all part of sales. And you'll notice how I use these words interchangeably: sales, persuasion, communication. That's all, they're all the same, right? And oftentimes we think of sales as sleazy or trying to take advantage, pulling the wool over people's eyes. The worst salesmen in the world are the ones that you know they're a salesman. Like those, that dirty feeling of like right. used car salesmen, those are the worst salesmen, right? Yeah. The salesmen that are the best are the most effective communicators.
Yeah.
They're the guys that are trying to understand problems and effectively solve them for their clients, right? And so, and again, that all requires a skill. It all requires you learning something, you understand. And so to your point, you know, there may be some people that have blessed attributes that might help them in this game, but sales, there's a science to it, just like anything else. And I could teach a whole mastermind on just certain tactics, certain words, certain inflections that you use in sales. But just like anything else, the deeper you go, the more effective you're going to be. And there is a science to this game. So
I love that. I think that's so important, man. And, you know, it reminds me of, I love the communication. He says sales, persuasion, and communication. You know Myron Golden?
I'm better with faces. I might know.
Yeah, just gentleman, old black dude. I shouldn't say old. I mean, he's literally age as well. That's salt and pepper. But he's almost like a pastor, man. I love the guy, and he talks about the values of basically the value ladders, right? People work with the hands. They work with the hands. That's what you get compensated. Then you get paid to manage people. That's one thing. Then you get paid to communicate, and then you get the highest one is vision, right? Like you just have an idea and then you have the right people. But the communication, man, is like, and people sleep on it. They think communication being loud and all that. No, it's listening. It's reading. It's so many things, which is honestly part of the reason why I love the podcast, because it forces me to be able to listen and ask good questions. But man, so communication, sound pillar, and it's so fascinating because I see this all the time. I mean, I'll be like, okay, you're having success in here, but you said it's a transferable skill set, right? You said you got really good with operations. Tell me about how you saw that transfer into, you know, the management. But before the management, I'll take a step back actually, because you said you got your first property and then you immediately said you got into portfolio. What was that transition that said, okay, great, I'm going to move out of my house, I'm going to Airbnb? And at what point did it click? Was it the results, or was it actually a person that came into your life and said, hey, actually, I think you're going on the right path, or actually, I think you should tap into Airbnb? Which one was it? Because I know for me, it was a person, but for you, was it just the results, the proof is in the pudding, or was it someone who also planted the seed for you to continue to double down on that path?
Really good question. So to answer that, it was results. Now, granted, I was naive to take the results and think they were more than what they were at the time.
You got hyped real quick.
Yeah, because when I first got into it, my first month, I was just like, hey, if I could break even on the mortgage, I'm straight. Like, if I can just not have a liability, I'm straight. And in that first month, I made $2,000 net. That was after everything. And I was stoked. I was just like, this is wild. This is crazy, right? And little did I know, you fast forward to the first annual year of that actual property, and I was negative, right? Because Airbnb, it's seasonal. There's all these factors. Like, you know, that was around the time that it was the summertime, and so it was high peak season. So in my head, I was just thinking that, like, this is how it was going to be. But I'm so thankful for that kind of, even that naive hope, because it's what got me to jump.
Wait, dude, that's so important, man. That's that momentum, right? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it's the other way around, where you're analysis paralysis, where you're too smart for your own good, or you know too much, and therefore now you're kind of like, but I would, you know, when we say, you know, experiment, fail, learn, repeat, it's just like, dude, dive in, get the data, right? And then course correct, right? I mean,
yep.
I love that though, because I don't want that to slip through the cracks, because I think sometimes we get so caught up in like to a fault, like there's all these softwares now, AirDNA, MasterRise, et cetera. And we start going like, which market is the best? I looked at this list, I look at that. And now we're not even taking any action, and we're not even building that momentum. Now, you course corrected. Well, how did you course correct? And what was the adjustment that you made with which I applaud you for doing it, like a true practitioner taking action. So what was the course correction?
So the course correction was really just as I started to realize that there was a deeper science to this game of short-term rentals, as there is with anything. The course correction then became when I started to really self-educate and invest in myself, which is ironic. We're talking about these two very topics, right? We're talking about taking the jump, taking action, really. And then the second thing that needs to go hand in hand with that early on in anybody's career is freaking betting on yourself, investing on yourself and just betting on yourself, right? And I am convinced that it is those two characteristics that separate the top 10% from the rest of the 90. It's not skills. It's not brains, right? Because there's a hell of a lot more people that are a lot smarter than I am in every facet. But the two characteristics that I'm willing to do that most are not is one, taking massive action and then just giving myself permission by just betting on myself and taking the chance. Just understanding that I will figure it out, that I have the wherewithal, the capacity to be able to figure things out. And I've learned too, really, and this is a saying that I share with everybody, like, you really only need to know 60% of a solution to move forward. Like, that's all you need. If you have 60%, you will figure out the 40, right? But there, the problem is there's too many people that want to know 99.9, and that is their problem and will always be their problem. And really what that is that's an inherent lack of trust in yourself to figure stuff out, right? And so I love that we're talking about these two things because I'm super passionate about it, because as I look back at the course of my life, it's the two single most characteristics that have served me the most, to where now my risk tolerance is just way up here, because risk is, to me, it's just a word I don't relate to with people, because it's now not risk, it's trust. How much do I trust myself? That's so good. You know? And that's where I'm like, hey, whenever I see a problem now, it's never a matter of like, can I do this? It's, am I willing to? Do I want to? Right. Wait. And so, and it's crazy, because I know there's going to be a lot of people listening to this, Ruben, that'll ruffle their feathers, because they're like, well, you gotta know this. Guys, when I jumped into this, I'm telling you, I knew nothing about real estate.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it was, the beauty in my very first deal, which to this day, my very first creative deal, I've lost money. I lost money on it. But the reason why it was so valuable was because what it taught me and the mental shift that it allowed in my brain to take place of realizing like, hey, I'm okay. Now I know how to do it. Now I'm going to do it better next time, right?
Yeah.
And that just doesn't take place. That synapsis, like those connections in your brain,
yeah,
they don't take place if you don't jump.
Yeah. They don't take place on YouTube yep. University or anything else of that nature. Man, I want to echo that though. I'm taking notes, man. You said taking action, investing yourself, pillar number one, and then betting on yourself, which is fascinating, because I think the action gives you the confidence. At the end of the day, the root word is confidence and trust and faith, which you said. And one thing I want to put in there that my coach, you know, I'm a mindset coach, and it's like, it really resonated with me this year. And I want to share this with you, Lame, and the audience. It's like, one of the things my coach said is it's a lot of us based on goals, based on the how you're going to do it. When really it's the thing that the catalyst towards any goal that is great. Like you said, the 60% rule, I love that. If it's anything big worth really going after, you don't got it figured out. But what you have done is you've made a decision, and you said that, am I willing to? If you decide today, you cross that line, you say, all right, that's it. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to just invest in myself. I'm going to tap in with Lame. I know he's got a caster, a community, or I'm going to tap in with whoever you resonate with. And I'm going to say, I'm going to commit because you've made the decision. Therefore, now that goal can be accomplished. But until you make that decision and don't just cross that line or draw that line in the sand, it's just out there, man. And it's not, it's just fascinating. Because, you know, these principles are everywhere around us, right? We see athletes, we see anyone who's achieved anything great, someone like you, it's the same principles. You have to have trust and faith and a commitment.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. And I love that you bring up athletes because psychologically, right, or physiologically, excuse me, if you just eat less calories than you consume, or you burn more calories than you consume, it's inevitable. And that is the same principle in business. It really is. If you just work hard enough for a long enough period of time, you will figure it out. Like there's only a finite amount of failure routes that one can walk before they stumble upon success. But yet we always think about it alternatively. Mm-hmm. We're always thinking about like, hey, I need to pick the right success route. It's like, no, you have to walk so many failures before you find a success, but it's there if you just keep walking, you know? And that's where, like, to your point, these principles are all around us. And, you know, it's funny because the older I get, and I was telling my wife this, and this is a thought that everybody at some point, if you bet on yourself, you will find and you will come to it yourself. And those of you that won't are just because you didn't bet on yourself. But the more business I do and the more people I learn from and the further I go in life, I just realized two very, very, very core principles. One is that people are not nearly as smart as I think they are.
Oh, dude.
In every capacity, like you look at people like the most famous person you know, most expert, Elon Musk, they're not nearly as smart as you think they are. But then the second thing that needs to be understood is like you are a lot more capable than you realize. Right. But the answer to both of those, the reason why Elon isn't nearly as smart as he is and why I am a lot smarter than I am is because both individuals are, they're just willing to take action.
Bold.
When it comes to Elon, he's worked himself to that. Like he has just gotten to a point where he's just taken so much action that he now has built this massive empire. But it's not anything that anybody else that didn't just take that amount of action couldn't do. Likewise, I'm a lot smarter than I realize because I am willing to do a lot more and I'm willing to work and take action more than most.
Yeah.
And so it's like those two principles, like they continue to be more and more true the higher up I get because, again, like it just comes down to this, to these same principles, these core principles that we're talking about, right?
Bro, allow me. You hit the nail on the head. And you know what's crazy about that? Like as you were saying that, I'm thinking about there's two things that popped out, right? One is like when you said it, it really hit. And I was like, okay, hold on. I want to make sure I don't lose this train of thought. It was the one around the people, like if you, the amount of route failures, right? There's just, it will eventually lead to success. And the thing is, what I think it is psychologically, I think people who don't want to take a lot of action are looking for the path of least resistance, but there is no place where you could just find that shortcut. The results come with the reps. And therefore, if you're not willing to do the work, you're going to try to find how can I get the highest return with the least amount of effort. And unfortunately, or fortunately, because it is by law, right? Energy created cannot be destroyed, right? You get what you put into the universe, right? And so when you think about that, that really resonated with me because I'm like, oh man, that's so good. You're like, you're right. Like people are trying to find a shortcut and not willing to take as many actions. And that's why there's analysis but paralysis because they're like, this is the one phone call I'm going to make. This is the one door I'm going to knock on. I got to be perfect. No. You got to knock on 100,000 more doors.
Right? Yeah.
You don't have to figure it all out because you're going to do on that one. You're planning for one when you should be planning for six extra zeros behind it. The other thing, man, that you touched on is like, I my background is consulting. You'd be surprising, like, you know, going to these corporations and basically ask them, why do you do things this way? And they'd be like, because we've always done it this way. And you'd be like, what? I'm talking about some big companies. They're still using like Excel documents. You're like, dude, everyone's just flying by the seat of their pants. Or even some large companies. Sometimes I look at it. I'm like, I always tell this to my wife. I'm like, you realize that this is beautiful that these businesses, like you call them, they don't pick up. You say they're going to do something, they don't do it. Like to me, that just shows the opportunity that exists that these companies could be doing that well and they still don't got it figured out. They're still not tight on their systems.
Facts.
I'm like, golly, this isn't giving the little man hope. Right? So I resonate with you on that.
And social media has lied to us.
Oh.
It has tricked our emotions into thinking that these big conglomerates have everything figured out.
Sure.
When you dive into the weeds, nobody has it figured out. Like, we're just all taking action day by day of how do we be better than yesterday?
Yep.
And until you can realize that for yourself, you will continue to live into this la la land of people are here and I'm here.
No.
Which is not the truth.
Yeah.
At all. And so, I love this conversation because at the end of the day, I just remember 10 years ago, people always talking about success. And they would always talk about mindset. It was always this mindset. And I would get frustrated because I'm a very tactical person. To me, I'm okay, but how'd you actually do it? And what's crazy about it is that the mindset follows the solution. It really does. Or excuse me, the solution always follows the mindset. Once you put yourself in a position to where you can see and hear what you need to see and hear, you figure it out.
Yep.
And that is such a life principle that sounds really simple because it is.
Yeah, it is.
But it's not easy.
Yeah.
It isn't easy.
Well,
but it's very simple.
What's crazy about this? And I'm gonna transition, but you're just on fire right now. And I wanna make sure that nothing slips through the cracks here, man. What you talked about, this whole the mindset that you need to have, it also goes back to the fundamentals of going back to that decision, right?
Yep.
Because once you make it's almost like the reticular activating system. You talked about it, right? Before you start doing debt funds and now you see it all over. Another thing that's important is when you start to dream big and have big goals, you're now on that frequency level of trying to find big solutions, right? So that's 10x easier than 2x, kind of, right? That entire concept, it makes sense. And it didn't occur to me until that. I was like, okay, that's interesting. How is it easier? It's because you're solving bigger problems and there's a high return. But until you make that decision that this is what I want to do, and because most people are thinking this is what I'm going to do based on what I know. But once you make a decision based on what you don't know, just based on aspiration and desire, you'll then, to your point, start the mindset in itself will start attracting the solution because they are on that frequency level of solving that big problem with the highest return. And you're using the 60% rule that you just talked about, which you still don't know, but you've made the decision. And then you start attracting solutions for that big problem. You start attracting the people. You start attracting conversations because you're on that frequency level. It's like tuning into a radio station. You can't be on 94.5, right? If you're not tuned into 94.5, you're not going to tune into an 89.5. You got to be there. And I think we forget that. And that's where most of us are setting these small goals. And it's so funny. I never resonated. I never truly understood. I'm I understood 10X, right? Growth, Grant talks about 10X, 10X, right? Whether you like him or you don't. But it's the mindset you need to be at to start attracting those solutions and opportunities. And it's mindset. It's unbelievable.
Experiment Nation, you've heard the word MTR, midterm rentals, as it is currently a hot topic and hot commodity right now, because again, there has been an increase in short-term rental regulations, and there also has been, let's face it, a slowdown in what we were experiencing a couple years back when it comes to bookings. So with that said, short-term rental operators are looking for alternative solutions to tap into the midterm rental space. However, there is a space, there is a sub niche of midterm rental insurance that I'm truly excited about that I want to share with you, that the experience that we've had, the tremendous results we've been able to have, and that's the insurance midterm rental space, which is very different than your traditional midterm rentals. When you think of traditionally midterm rentals, you think of travel nurses. There is a space, Mr. Mental Insurance space that we've tapped in, where you need to be well connected with insurance and relocation specialists and companies and understand the right type of asset required for you to be able to help these families. What's really important that stands out the most, which you can get in what I'm about to offer you, is the understanding where to be found by these insurance companies, how to properly manage your calendar so that your listings are optimized so that they can find you, how to actually gain traction and build a relationship with these relocation insurance companies. I've put together an MTR insurance blueprint, that's MMTRRR insurance blueprint, to cover these foundations after we've had success landing very large contracts on single family homes that literally 4x what we traditionally make in long-term rentals, and also gives us peace of mind because there's less turnover and 100% occupancy, because these contracts can start anywhere from 30 days to 3 months to 8 months and range anywhere from, again, we've landed anywhere from $8,000 to $9,000 a month in per month on a single family home property, which our mortgages are typically around the $2,400 range, which then gives you a large spread of anywhere from $4,000 to $6,000 net on just one property. And this is why it's very hot right now. But people who haven't been in the lab with individuals like myself, like Jesse Vasquez and Dr. Rachel Gainsborough and Noble Crawford, don't have the foundations and don't know exactly where to start. And therefore, this is why I'm giving you guys a blueprint, the MTRR insurance blueprint. Go to the website, experimentrealestate.com, and get yourself a blueprint to completely change or at least have a plan B if you're a short-term rental operator looking to maximize your occupancy and profitability. We'll see you on the other side.
And you know what? So this will be a case in point, right? Real life experience. So I've been in real estate about 6-7 years, right?
Yeah.
I've learned when it pertains to real estate. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've learned any more, significantly more of what I needed to learn to be where I am at today, except in the first 3 years. Does that make sense? Wow. So like I learned pretty much the max amount of what I actually needed to learn mm-hmm. to operate at the level I am now in the first 3 years of my 7-year career. And you know what's crazy is my consulting fee has gone from $25 an hour in the first 3 years mm-hmm. to now. I won't look at anything unless it's about $1,000 an hour worth my time. Mm-hmm. Right. And like and P&L is likewise. Back then I was making a couple six figures. We did just under 8 figures last year. Right. Mm-hmm. And so like, it's crazy that like the only thing that's changed is my mindset. That's literally wow. the only thing that has actually changed. Granted, I know a little bit more about real estate, but not enough to where it would have been a significant inability for me to do what I'm doing now.
Yep.
3-4 years ago, I could have done it if I was mentally there.
That's
but it right. takes these repetitions, it takes these failures, it takes you going through it to eventually get to a point where you realize what you're worth and you realize what frequency you need to tune into to listen to the messages that you want to go and hear, right? And that's to this point, mindset's everything. It's everything. If you think it, your thoughts determine your actions, and your actions create your reality. Mm. That is the truth.
Bro, I love the perspective of that. 3 years of foundation and then knowing your worth. Wow. That's what's up, bro. So you went from, you got the proof of concept. You then started using still your own money. What was the next? How did you kind of scale throughout the next couple of years? I know what it's looking like now, but I want to just go through that trajectory of like first FHA, had to pay down the taxes, etc. Proof of concept, gives you that confidence boost. Oh wow, this is a real thing. This could work too. Hey, turns out, end of the year, I ended up losing, but there was a little, it sparked something. What did that next spark lead to?
So I think it was the first time that I had actually, and I always use this reference because it makes the most sense in my mind. Mm-hmm. It was the first time that I had actually given myself permission to like really go out and take action, right? And what I mean by that is, up until that point, it wasn't an option to like allocate any resources outside of a surplus, outside of surplus that I need for my living expenses. Like, it wasn't an option to be able to spend any money for another venture. It wasn't an option to potentially quit my job to go all in on this opportunity. Those just weren't options. And too many times when I talk to people, like, I always give them advice and they're like, well, I couldn't do that because of this. I couldn't do that because of that. Right? There's just so many limiting capacities that you give yourself, mental barriers, just because of the framework you're operating under, which is surviving, which is, or just holding on to what's there, right? But when I had actually taken the leap to do this Airbnb, and then I started that it was losing, I think more than anything, what I was excited about was that I at least made something, often an idea that I had just created myself.
Wow.
And to me, that was enough proof of concept to be like, well, can I do it at a greater scale? Can I do it better? And then that's when it started to get into this wheelhouse of me spending money on myself in different ways, starting a business, going to masterminds, paying for high ticket consulting. Like, these are all things that, like, alternatively, I just never gave myself permission. And full transparency, early on, it was debt that I used to be able to finance these things. I was digging in a hole to be able to get further.
Yeah.
And like, I was just betting on myself on like making it happen. And that's exactly what I did with my Airbnb, was because we financed, we put a lot of what we bought in that first house on a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like, that's against every rule of Dave Ramsey you can think of. But I made money and I was like, this is great. We lost a little money, but it gave, but I had given myself permission to do something. And that led to, okay, let me do this. Let me do this. And now I'm at a point where, like, and this is a lot of people, I ruffle a lot of feathers when I say this. And it's just because the right people will understand it and the wrong people think it's stupid, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the truth. Nobody has created wealth by saving or budgeting money. Nobody ever has. And what I mean by that is that you have to spend money to make money. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not telling people to make stupid decisions, but if you're trying to budget and you're trying to, like, it's so funny. So many people come to me and they're like, oh, well, this is my budget, this is that. And I'm like, all right, well, if that's your budget, then you just put a limiting capacity on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it. And nobody ever got rich doing it that way. What they got rich in was by essentially deploying money, putting it into investments, yourself, the business, other people. And granted, you're risking failing it, but that is the game of business. And again, if you just are willing to make a decision and make it work, you'll make it work, right? But you can't make that decision if you're just stuck to a budget. And again, it's just so funny to me, because people want to change their lives, but you want to change your life on a budget? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, good luck doing it, you know? And again, I, you know, there's a lot more context to that. I could do a whole podcast just on that.
Trust me. You and I could geek out. You know, I'm curious, Lame, what your thoughts are on this, because I've taken some notes myself on to how I reflect on this. But what is your take these days with, I don't think we have a shortage of information, right? And I could see how that could even create more analysis paralysis, right? What is your take on when you've made that decision on, and you're ready to say, listen, I'm going to bet on myself here, right? What is your framework that you use to say, here's who I'm going to invest into, here's what I'm going to invest into, what needs to happen before, and then what happens next? Just so someone who's listening is really resonating when he was like, okay, that's, I love what Lame is saying, but like, what does that look like for me to actually just bet on myself?
Really good question. So there's a few things that key indicators that I learned about myself in when I was in the journey early on, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first one was that I learned the hard way that you should never invest in somebody if you're just trying to figure out if it's what you want to do.
Mm.
If you haven't already made a decision. And I'm not even saying that you have to act, you have to know a certain level of that topic to then pay a mentor. I'm just saying you have to decide. Like, you have to make the decision, hey, I'm going deep into this. Here's my money. Too many people are paying somebody to really just tell them if it's a good idea or not, right? And they do that in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of people that pay with the expectation of like, hey, this is going to make me rich. But at the end of the day, in any course that you buy, in any mentorship that you take a part of, that information is available for free.
100%.
But the reason, in any capacity, everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. But the reason you pay for a mentor is you pay for somebody to hold you accountable. Mm-hmm. You pay for somebody to give you some shortcuts, some tips and trips, tips and tricks. I always do that. Yeah. To be able to hopefully save you time, right? But a big indicator of whether or not that is going to work is simply the decision prior that you have to make that you're going to make it work, 100%. Right? And then once you do that, then it's a matter of doing enough due diligence of finding somebody that is worthy of being a mentor. And the easiest way to do that is just results. It's just results, right? Like, just making sure that whoever you're investing in, they have real results and you're verifying that and validating it. I actually think there's a lot more good mentors than bad. But I think what's the horrible practice that we've partaken of by way of kind of this culture we live in now is that there's too many victims. There's too many people not willing to take accountability for their lack of implementation.
Oh, 100%. Or
their lack of action taking.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part about the coaching space. I used to be one of those. Mm-hmm. I used to be one of those. Like, if any of my family or people I knew took a course and they didn't make their money back like that, I was always like, that was a scam. It was a scam. And like, now that I'm here and I've invested multiple six figures into mentorships, consulting, like, I realize now that like, you have to be willing to take action for it to work. Like, it only, things work not because of the idea, the concept, or the business. Things work because you work. Mm-hmm. Like, you are the gas to the fire, right? And that's what I tell everybody. And guys understand that have a law of abundance, because you get to this certain point, I'm willing to tell everybody exactly what I do, because at the end of the day, what's going to execute it isn't what I tell them, it's me. And I know that people can't be me. That's why I'm willing to give this away, right? But that's the mindset you got to have. Again, all comes back to mindset.
Yeah. No, it's so good what you said. It's, I think people, I couldn't agree more with sometimes take the approach of, we'll see if this worked, but they haven't made the decision to make it work.
Yep. Right?
And that goes for anything, right? That's like going to school and say, let's see if this works. No, you make it work, right? Or even if you got a job, like, are you going to use this as a vehicle for your dream, right? There's no scam unless you start scamming yourself. I mean, and usually people shortchange themselves, right?
100%.
That's crazy. But that's so good. So you start scaling. Tell me about how, you know, the operations, where does that come in, where you were like, okay, great, we're going to start a management company. At what point does the management company come into play, and why is that the next course of action on your path of progression?
Yeah. So management company, when I decided to start that, it was twofold, right? The first one is I wanted to escape the 9-to-5, right? And for me, it was this sales job. And the easiest way to do that was to start a management company. Because in a management company, you can partake in real estate without having to have money or your own piece of property, right? Because management, all I had to do was just manage somebody's property for them in exchange for money and services, right? And so really, it's just a service-based company. And it's funny because like for a long time, and there's going to be people on this that would like probably argue with me, but like, I didn't get into actually real estate until I started buying real estate, right? Management company often, especially a real estate management, real estate company is often thrown into like, oh, yeah, I'm in real estate. And it's like, no, you're actually in services, right? In operations. And I take pride in that. And that was like for me, I, you know, it used to irk me when I was just in management until I started to buy properties, and then I understood, right? Because management is simply just an operations heavy business. And the guys that are better at it aren't the guys that have more doors. They're the guys that understand how to provide a better service, right? And that was naturally what made the most sense, given I didn't have a ton of money to put in. I had enough money to start a management company, but I didn't have enough money to go buy multiple properties to create some cash flow. So I had to do that in a service-based industry. Once I did that, it then started, again, these decisions just started to come. Or once I made the decision to figure it out, these opportunities started to come. Once I had a management company in place, then I started to look around like, man, cleaning, man, servicing, man, there's all these ancillary services I can provide. And all of those came by way of just me taking action with the management company, to where now I have a fleet of, you know, 50 plus Turo cars that I provide to all of my Airbnb guests. In-house cleaning. The cleaning murders it. Like, I could probably sell that portion of my business for a chunk of change for an exit because of how profitable it is. Servicing, same. You know, we're looking at potentially buying an HVAC company to even own that whole piece. But like, there's just so much opportunity that came from it. And then obviously just getting really good at finding occupancy, which is a very important piece for me, which was basically just demanding dollars in different verticals that all these other property managers aren't. All the property managers around me, and the most that are in short-term rentals, they, Airbnb has made them lazy. VRBO has made them lazy. Post on there and you get 20 million views, right? Whereas like, there are insurance, professional, government, there's all these other contracts that literally just require marketing. You have to treat it like a business, right? And so, and that's where the operations came into place for us, as we started to understand the landscape of opportunity with all of these different things. And we started to really just pick them all apart, to where I got to a point where, you know, I'm making great margins on managing. How do I buy? And that's when we shifted into buy. But to give you my operational background, that's where it all started, was just solving all those problems.
So that's interesting, man, because it's like all, it's like vertically integrated, right? You got the cleaning, you got the marketing, you got the managing, you got the ancillary services. That's, are you saying, just so I'm clear, on most property managers are using, you know, these OTAs like Airbnb, VRBO, and they pretty much say set it and forget it, and you guys are taking it to the next level? What does that look like? Because I know that's kind of very similar to, you know, maybe our approach. Yeah. I know we have very deep kind of insurance companies, relationships, etc. But when you say marketing, what does that actually look like? What is it that you're, how are you positioning your company to then be above the marketplace and providing, it sounds like, more leads to your clientele that you're managing on behalf?
So the whole professional side of marketing, your personal brand, and your stays, really is just, and there's a million ways to do it. The way that we've done it has been networking, especially with professional contracts. I won't go into insurance because that's your game, right? And you guys and people have probably heard you talk about it, but the professional side is where I think a lot of people are too lazy. For example, we just signed a portfolio, part of our portfolio. There's about six of these units. They're all individual houses that are all in kind of a 3-mile radius. We just had a company approach us and do direct bookings for that property for 2 weeks out of our hottest season at top market rates every year. And they want to stay there every year, right? And that is a, that's off platform. We found them off platform. They found, they we delivered on their service. They loved it. They enjoyed it. And because we're going off platform, they're saving 5%. We're taking 10% more, right? And so there's a whole game to this. And that's one of many. We, Utah's known for tech. There's a huge tech called the Silicon Slopes out here. It's like this point on the mountain where there's a lot of multi-million, some billion-dollar businesses, Adobe, Domo.
Where is this?
This is here in Utah in a city called Lehigh at the top of the mountains, what we like to call it. And we have executive assistants and location specialists for each of these companies to where when they're having a seminar, when they're having an executive come in, when they're having anything that is flying any of their employees or executives into this headquarter HQ, we're one of the first calls they make because people don't want to stay in hotels, right? And so these are all verticals. And again, this is a billion-dollar, trillion-dollar industry of professional contracts. Of there are countless companies that are paying money to hotels right now that would have a preference to be able to deliver on, would be able to give you that, cut you that check if you could deliver on similar services, right?
Yeah.
And those are out there just for those that are willing to go make it happen.
So. I love that. Now for some of our listeners, you might be like, okay, this is, I'm willing to roll up my sleeves and do the work, right? We're not talking about the like, please spoon feed me. If you wanted to just plant this seed of like, here's where you should probably start having a peek at where most people are not looking. I know for us in the insurance, there's a lot of databases where you can start. There's a lot of optimization so that they can start reaching out to you. What would you say just to plant that seed to the listener of like, hey, here's where most people are not looking, or here's what people are not doing that you should, if you're listening to this, you're an action taker, hey, this one's on me.
Google five mid-tier to big-tier corporations in your city, okay? Mm-hmm. Get on LinkedIn and find their relocation specialist or find an executive assistant, right? And then approach them either at their office, digitally, whatever, with a brochure and a box of cookies. And I promise you that's going to go a long ways, right? And that's what people aren't doing. That's my door-to-door in me. Like being able to like we got an insurance contract by me just Googling an insurance firm. And it was like a family-owned one that's pretty big here called Bear Lake. And I just like found one of their relocation specialists that lives, that like they have a location not too far from here. And I just went and camped out till I saw them during work hours. I went and approached her, gave her a box of cookies. We had a conversation, gave her a brochure. And then 2 weeks later, I landed a contract. Right? And these are things that people aren't doing because we've gotten away from.
We've gotten cute, man. We've gotten cute.
Oh, we've gotten so. Yeah. We've got like, oh, let me pull this list. Let me buy this. Let me buy that. Yeah, what I just told you is what you will never hear anybody say, but I promise you it works. It's going to breed a hell of a lot more results than you buying that damn list and doing cold calling. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so just being very articulate and like, and you know, as well as I do on LinkedIn, it's relocation specialist, it's housing advisor, it's executive assistant. And as you start taking action, you're going to find these keywords.
Yep.
And I'm just going to Google, I'm going to see, oh, on LinkedIn, this person's out of Utah. Oh, she's out of Salt Lake. Oh, there's an office in American Fork. Mm-hmm. Oh, she works out of that office. Okay, I'm going to go camp till I see her face. Hey, you must be Kira. Hey, Kira, my name's Lame. I'm with Elkridge Management. I just wanted to approach you. Might have an opportunity for you, but wanted to give you these cookies, right? Mm-hmm. Here's a brochure. Boom, right? People are going to remember you far more than any cold email that you send or cold call that you make.
100%.
So,
yep. People always remember how you made them feel. That's a good one, man, by the way. And I appreciate that because, you know, if you're still listening to this at this point, you know, I know in our Experiment Nation, people take action, right? And they understand our core values about taking action. And then once you find that right mentor and continue to invest in yourself in that. So I appreciate that nugget. One of the things we started off the show with is, you know, this was offline, is kind of what you're getting into now, which you got into the creative financing space. And what I love about this is you kind of established the foundation of, okay, communication, sales, right? First, you have to have the right mindset, communication, sales, operations, and then once you again have continue to invest in yourself, you're now saying, well, hold on, there's a different way to do this, right? I don't always have to go to the bank. Tell me about how that opportunity came, because I you know, you got the proof of concept with the Airbnb, you start to scale it, then you kind of laid the foundation with operations, you found different opportunities within the verticals of management to create more revenue, which I could go down deep down that rabbit hole, which I'm so interested in discovering, but for the interest of time, now you have this creative financing, which I think is a very, very big kind of like gem that either people have heard of, but are not really realizing how high the returns can be if you do this and you add the short-term rental model to it and you have the relationships that you built in your marketplace over time with contracts that you can lend. Whew, how did that come into the your, I was to say, on your tool belt?
Yeah. And really, it came by way of like just answering the question that everybody has. It's like, how the hell do you scale a real estate portfolio without taking 10 years, right? It's like, you know, just to give you some numbers, like we own over 100 doors now, and I've only been doing real estate for 6-7 years.
That's amazing. So, and, like, and you did some crazy number in creative last year. How many did you close on or something? That
yeah, we did. So we did just over 50 last year. So we've done a lot of them in the last. Crazy. So really, I haven't, like in the landscape of my portfolio, like I haven't been around for years to accumulate these hundreds of doors, right? And so really, that was the question that I tried to solve, which was how do I scale given all the limitations of traditional marketing? And that's where I found creative finance, which is, you know, you can go very deep and it can be very complex, but at its core, just to simplify for time's sake, you are able to buy properties from a seller directly. And you can do that in a way that doesn't require any credit checks, doesn't require any of the riffraff, taxes, seasoned money, all of these things that it takes in a traditional finance aspect. You don't need any of that, right? You just need to find the right seller, understand the right process, and you can transact the deal. And the crazy part about this is these deals are incredible, right? We just bought an 11-unit complex from an owner that owns it free and clear, and we put 10% down. The interest rate on it was 4% flat with no payments for the first 6 months and interest-only payments for the first 6 months after that. So within the first year, our mortgage on this 11 unit is like $18,000, right? Like I anticipate to make that in month one, right? And so, but that was coming from a seller that had a property on the market that couldn't sell for the price point he wanted because the market's not in his favor, but also wasn't hurting for money. He didn't need to get out of a quick hit. And so I was able to provide an opportunity by saying, hey, let me make you the bank. We'll write up a note. You take the interest on the note and then I'll treat you like the bank. And then we come up with the deal together. And that's what we did. Right. And I didn't have to show any of my credit. Didn't have to show any of my, if you pulled my credit, it wouldn't be on there. Right. Yeah. Just cause we isolated an LLC. And again, for an investment, especially for 11 unit would have been a commercial jumbo loan. I would have probably had to put 35-40% down. 100%. I put 10. Right.
Yeah, that's wild.
And so these are those deals that exist. And guys, these aren't crazy deals. I'm buying these every month. That's right. Wild. And I know a lot of people are, but that's how we found creative finance and what it means in today's market.
What would you say is the, because I think people are like, you know, geek out around this, but I also want you to be able to at least call out the process behind it. Would you say some of this comes from your management company? Would you say some of this is a stood up operation that says, hey, listen, we're going to go ahead and dial or we're going to go ahead and knock on doors? What would you say is the, just so people have an understanding of like the process required? I think people hear the end goal and they're like, wow, that's really nice. I want to do it, you know, 50 properties in 1 year, but what is the actual process behind once you've made the decision, you have the mindset to kind of go for that opportunity?
The really is just to find the right mentor or to take the time to learn it yourself, right? You're going to pay for it in two ways, either time or money, right? With time, again, everything out there, guys, is available for free on the internet. Everything subject to seller finance, you can Google that and find things for days, right? And you're going to have to invest the time to be disciplined enough to learn it on yourself and to be able to go out there and execute. Or you find a mentor and you pay a little bit of money to be able to be in the right community, surrounded by the right people to be able to learn and transact these things, right? And so, and those would be, in my opinion, to answer your question, the two next steps once you've decided this might be something you want to take advantage of.
That's awesome, bro. And what do you, I know for us here, we have a buy box sweet spot of like, hey, this is the kind of deals we're going for. Sounds like you said 11 unit, et cetera. Do you have a specific kind of buy box criteria that allows you to say, hey, this is what we're going to go for in this marketplace? And by the way, what marketplaces are you looking? Are you just focused in on one? Or are you looking kind of to expand and plant this process in multiple areas?
Yeah, I think a buy box for anybody is wholly determined on their strategy, right? Mm-hmm. For me, I know everything is going to be short-term rental.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know that I'm going to want to move quickly. I want to see cash flow quickly.
Yep.
And because of that, my buy box is derived by the deal that can permit that. So typically what that looks like is it's rent ready or light cosmetic. This 11 unit was already rehabbed, mm-hmm. right? I will never put more than 10% down. And if I do, then the interest rate's going to be incredible, which for this 11 unit was 4%, right? Mm-hmm. And then the third factor in that is the balloon payment, which is the point in time in which I have to actually refinance the property out to get the seller out of there. I never will go under 5 years. So it's either going to be 5 years or longer for a balloon. And so those are kind of, if I can get those on any deal that's in typically a decently populated area, then I'm going to do just fine. And so that's kind of our general. And granted, I've paid 20% for some of my deals,
yep.
but it's because I had 0% interest, right? And so we'll give and take on any one of those, but that's kind of generally our starting point. So.
That's awesome. And then the exit on the way in, you're analyzing it like SDR, the analysis on the way out. Is there still this idea that, you know, what is the worst case scenario look like? Do you ever even look at LTR rates, or you're strategically like, nope, these numbers need to make sense with respect to the SDR forecast or performa?
Really good. So we are first and foremost a short-term rental underwriter, right? So yep. that's what we're looking at, and that's what we're betting on. Mm-hmm. However, we are aware of long-term rents, which allow us to mitigate risk, mm-hmm. right? And so not for all of our deals, but for majority of our deals, we underwrite it with while knowing what our long-term rents are, so that in the worst case scenario, we can put a renter in there and be fine. And so, so that's kind of how we underwrite it and make it look. So,
love me, bro. I can't even tell you, bro, how excited I am for you, because I know, you know, and we could have like 2 to 3 podcasts on just your entire process alone and your journey. But I know right now you're even starting to get into, some funding activities, yep. to continue to solve the problem. Like, how do I scale, right? How do I scale? And what I love as we listen to your story, it's sometimes people try to solve all the problems, right? How am I going to get funding? How am I going to get it? When I look at your trajectory and your journey, it's been like, what is the next course of action that I need to take, right?
Yeah.
The 60% rule, man. You coined it. You heard it here first. I got to thank you so much for it. And now one of the things you've been blessed to be able to do is help others. I think you were telling me offline how much success others are actually benefiting from, you know, them applying this creative acquisition strategy and turning it into an SDR. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you've been able to offer the marketplace? Because like I said, it's all about education. And I think you've obviously have the receipts to show. Listen, I want to, I'm going to definitely be in a position to buy myself some 50 some or odd units, but it doesn't come without a process and a system. So you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Listen, I come from a background of thinking that mentorships and coachings were all scam, mm-hmm. until I took it, until I was in the right mindset to be able to understand the value that they can be. And for me, I now spend multiple six figures on just that. 100%. So in creating my community, which is the Castor community, which is creative acquisitions into short-term rentals, I kind of backed into it wanting to give really that value of how can I actually give somebody real value that allows them to go out there and win in the marketplace, specifically in this field. And that's what we do. So it comes with everything from my people, everybody that I use from end to end to close deals with, mm-hmm. all the way to the legal documentations, right? Like there are a lot of people don't think how much time and effort and money it takes to be able to draft documents and the legal processes behind all this. And I have all of that. And I'd say the biggest value add by by hands down by far is the people within it. We've already had five students in the last 2 months close on their first deal. I am heavily involved in it at this point, which won't always be there. Mm-hmm. But right now it's at a manageable place to where I am very involved. And then we have weekly calls with me on it that I'm running. And so it's a marketplace that, you know, people can come in and learn how to creatively acquire not just real estate. We've had people buy businesses, but then with the exit of short-term rentals coupled with it. So that's kind of what we do and how we do it. And yeah, and so I'd be excited for anybody that would want to learn more about it. Just find me.
That's
so
awesome, man. Where can we tap in with you? I know I'm tapped in with you on the social. I think you do a very, very good job, by the way, of like very, again, you've mastered the communication. It's to me, it's, I can tell right away when someone's gotten their reps in. You communicate very well on social, even on here. Stoked to have you being able to go into detail, but you know, I know where I can find you, but where can the rest of people find you and what's the best place?
Yeah, socials would be the best. And so on there, my social is at HAI. LAMEK, and that's my full name, Hailamek K, and that's where you can find my socials. You can find access to the community there. You can follow me, put on a lot of free content. Yep. Again, I try and give real value, so it's all there.
Lame Kinikini, man, appreciate you, brother, coming into the lab. Hey, listen, man, next time I'm gonna have your lab coat because you're a certified practitioner in this lab. And so I want to thank you for again, not only sharing your insights, your journey, but your receipts, which we do value as much as possible. So thank you, Lame, man. Just like that, Experiment Nation, you heard it here live. We are out.
Experiment Nation, podcasting has changed the way we operate as real estate investors ourselves, and it can do the same for you. Podcasting has been the source of the masterclasses that we get thanks to the world-class real estate investors and practitioners and specialists that come into the lab from all realms, from short-term rentals to midterm rentals to real estate syndications to even software as a service. Owners, founders, entrepreneurs have helped enrich our experiments by giving us the education, helping us build a network, and lastly, and most importantly, a brand association to open up multiple doors for our respective businesses. If you understand the power that podcasting can have, and you know that you need one for your brand, please, you can rely on our team. InvestedTalent.com is my team and the team that helps this podcast, The Real Estate Experiment, become the fruition each and every single week to educate my community, build relationships on the air, and continue to build our brand. If you know that you need to do these same for your brand and you haven't pulled the trigger yet, maybe because you don't know how, our company, InvestedTalent.com, does the end-to-end from the time that you record, from the time that it is published, to even repurposing content on multiple social media platforms. That's what my team can do for you. Simply go to InvestedTalent.com and book a discovery call to see how my team can help you launch your podcast.